So today, on this seventh Sabbath, on our count to the Feast of Weeks and the Feast of First Fruits and the 50th day, I thought it might be helpful to review some basic instructions on how to count to Pentecost. You know, unlike the other holy days where God tells us exactly what day on which his appointed time should be observed, you know, we keep the Passover on the 14th. We have the Feast of Trumpets observed on the first day of the seventh month. We have the Day of Atonement listed on the 10th day of the 7th month. And unlike those instructions, as you know, for Pentecost, we are instructed to count the days, or count the weeks, or count the Sabbaths to bring us to the 50th day. And indeed, the Greek word means 50th, the Greek word Pentecost. So let's begin with Leviticus chapter 23, if you could turn over there. We'll begin by simply reading the basic instructions that God gives to Moses and to Israel on how to count towards Pentecost, so that when you reach the 50th day, you are in fact on that appointed time, that moed that God has ordained as his appointed time. So verse 15, we're going to read Leviticus 23 and verse 15. And you shall count unto you from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be completed. Even unto the day after the 7th Sabbath shall you number 50 days, and you shall offer a new grain offering unto the Eternal. And here we are on that 7th Sabbath. Now, as we read these instructions, you'll find that there are several ways that we could do this count so that we can arrive on the correct day. Notice we're instructed to count 50 days. You're also instructed to count 7 Sabbaths. In Deuteronomy, we'll see they actually use the word weeks. So we are instructed to count the weeks. The end point, we're told, is to coincide with the day after the 7th Sabbath. So with all of these methods of counting, the goal is to come to an agreement and to arrive on the correct day, the 50th day, which is the Feast of Pentecost and God's appointed time. Now, before we get into the technical details here, you know, such as examining Hebrew words and their usages, let's begin with some simple concepts. You know, we'll start with the simple and then we'll move to the complex. So we'll also start with some basic foundational assumptions. And the first assumption that I'd like to establish is that when it comes to God's basic instructions in his law, God is clear and he is specific. Now, you know, some people might argue that, you know, the scriptures can be vague in some cases and perhaps hard to understand. And perhaps that's true when it comes to prophecy, you know, or maybe with certain parables, but not with God's law. God's laws, in my observation, when it comes to the basic instructions in God's law, well, God is clear and he is precise and he is detailed. Okay, so let's look at these basic instructions. And before we look at Hebrew words, you know, let me ask you, how simple would you find these instructions? You know, if God were to tell you, you know, I want you to keep the Passover on the 14th day of the first month. I want you to keep a holy day on the 15th day of the first month. I want you to keep the days of unleavened bread for 7 days and then have a holy day on the 7th day. But during all of that, I want you to count from the day following the Sabbath. I want you to count 7 Sabbaths. I want you to count 7 weeks. And I want you to observe a holy day on the day following the 7th Sabbath, which is also the 50th day. Okay, so you have those instructions. Are they clear? Are you confused in any way? You know, what day would you begin to count from? God says to count the day following the Sabbath. Which day would that be? Take some time. You know, think about it. Think about it carefully. And while you're thinking about that, let me introduce the controversy to you. If you were to look at the Jewish calendar, and you can do this on Google, you can simply do a search for Jewish holidays 2024. If you were to go ahead and do that, you'll see that the holiday of Shavuot, which is their Pentecost, the holiday of Shavuot was this past Wednesday. It was Wednesday, June the 12th, which began at sunset the evening before. Shavuot is derived from the Hebrew word, and this is spelled S-A-B-U-A. I think it's Shavuah. I think the B might be sounded like a V, but we'll call it, it looks like Shavuah. But anyway, the Hebrew word Shavuah, and that is translated as the word week. It simply means week. So the holy day for the Jewish people is called the Feast of Weeks. And of course, that is a correct title. But for them, again, they celebrated it this past Wednesday. This day coincides with the sixth day of the third month on the Hebrew calendar, the sixth of Sivan. Now, every year it occurs on the same date on the Hebrew calendar. And I'll tell you why in a moment. But first, I want to go back and ask you. And if we had small children in the audience, you know, when I gave this sermon in Dallas, and I asked the small children in the audience, when we begin to count from the morrow after the Sabbath, what does the word Sabbath mean to you? Sabbath is the Sabbath, right? Even though you know it's entirely technically correct to refer to God's annual holy days as annual Sabbaths. You know, the first day of unleavened bread is an annual Sabbath. The last day of unleavened bread is an annual Sabbath. Even though you know this to be true, yet if I were to say in the midst of all that, in the midst of the spring holy days between Passover and the last day of unleavened bread, if I were to say, hey, let's get together for lunch on the Sabbath, you're going to assume I mean the weekly Sabbath, right? Today I was assigned to speak on the Sabbath. But what if you all showed up to services today and no Lynn Leiby? After about 15 minutes of perhaps thinking I'm late, you know, I still don't show up, you know, and you know, Mr. Caping's going to step out in the hallway and he's going to give me a call and he's going to say, Lynn, where are you? You've got the sermon. And I say, no, I don't. I'm assigned to speak on the Sabbath. And he says, yes, today is the Sabbath. And I say, yes, but tomorrow is also the Sabbath, right? Tomorrow is the annual Sabbath of Pentecost. Therefore, I plan to speak tomorrow. You see, my assignment wasn't clear enough. I was told I was speaking on the Sabbath. He didn't say the weekly Sabbath. He didn't say the annual Sabbath. He simply said the Sabbath. So I prepared to speak tomorrow. It's not going to go over too well, is it? Now, is it that simple? You know, I know the Hebrew language is different from the English. I know that the ancient Hebrew mindset is different from the way we think, but is it really that different? You know, I'm drawn back to my first point that when it comes to God's law, God is clear and he's precise and he's specific. He doesn't want us to be confused about what we're supposed to do. So in order for the Jewish people to arrive on the sixth day of the third month every year without fail, They have to start their count on the morrow after the annual Sabbath, which is the first day of unleavened bread. Now, for them, it's so painfully obvious that God must have meant the first annual holy day when he said the morrow after the Sabbath. But is that painfully obvious to you? You know, we've read the instructions together. What am I missing here? Why is it so painfully obvious that we assume that the first annual holy day is the Sabbath in question? All right, so let's assume that perhaps they have a valid argument. The holy days are indeed called annual Sabbaths, so technically they are Sabbaths. If God meant for us to begin the count after a day other than the weekly Sabbath, well, then we got a problem here, don't we? We have a problem with the law being vague and unclear because the passage itself, you know, dissect this any way you want, but if you read that passage, the passage itself does not specify which Sabbath we're to begin the count if the three Sabbaths in question are of equal consideration. You know, according to this reasoning, we can begin the count after the first day of unleavened bread, we could begin after the weekly Sabbath, or we could begin after the last day of unleavened bread. Any one of those three options would be valid because God doesn't spell it out for us. He leaves us with a 1 in 3 chance of getting it right. And I'll tell you what, you know, if it were up to me, you know, if God told me to go ahead and organize the count, Lynn Leiby, when do you think the count should begin? And when should we arrive at Pentecost? Now, if he told me I could do that, I had one of three options to counting the days, I'd pick the last day of unleavened bread. That's just me, because to me, the spring holy days, you know, with the Passover to the last day of unleavened bread, I want that to be one nice long party, right? Let's have a big party. We'll make it last 8 days. And then after that, we'll begin the harvest. Day one of the harvest should begin after the party. You know, let's not start the harvest in the middle of the party. So we'll have 8 days of feasting, fellowship, fun. Then we'll get back to work. Then after the last day of unleavened bread, on the morrow after the Sabbath, we'll count 50 days to the next holy day. Makes logical sense, doesn't it? But of course, that would be wrong. And why would that be wrong? Because I didn't take into account the meaning of the Passover and the death and the resurrection of the Savior and the necessity of 3 days and three nights in the tomb, and any longer than that in the tomb, and his body would have seen corruption. You see, under my plan, you know, my well thought out plan, Jesus Christ would have been in the tomb from the end of the Passover to the end of the last day of unleavened bread, a full 8 days. So that doesn't work. You know, let's scrap the Lynn Leiby plan and let's go with the scriptures. How does that sound, right? The Bible says to begin the count from the morrow after the Sabbath. It doesn't tell you which Sabbath because it doesn't have to. It should be obvious enough the way it's described here. The way the Sabbath is described in Leviticus 23 makes it clear, and I'll show you why. Let's drop down to verse 24. You're still in Leviticus 23, so let's drop down to verse 24. Notice what it says here about the Feast of Trumpets. Leviticus 23 and verse 24, speak to the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have a Sabbath, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. Okay, so God calls the Feast of Trumpets a Sabbath. It's a Sabbath rest. Isn't that interesting? Let's drop down to verse 32. Speaking about the Day of Atonement, notice what God says here in verse 32. It shall be to you a Sabbath of solemn rest, and you shall afflict your souls on the ninth day of the month at evening. From evening to evening, you shall celebrate your Sabbath. So the Day of Atonement is a Sabbath rest, just as the Feast of Trumpets is. Let's drop down to verse 39. Verse 39, also on the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep the Feast of the Eternal for 7 days. On the first day there shall be a Sabbath rest, and on the eighth day, a Sabbath rest. So we see that the Feast of Tabernacles is a Sabbath rest, and the eighth day is a Sabbath rest. So all the fall holy days are called Sabbath rests. So why then are not the spring holy days called Sabbath rests? Notice that back in verse, let's go back to verse 7 and 8. So verses 7 and 8, on the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it, but you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Eternal for 7 days. The seventh day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. So it's a holy convocation with no customary work on both days. Clearly, that's a Sabbath rest in the strictest sense, right? And yet God avoids using the word Shabbat there. Now, why do you suppose that is? You know, is it randomness? Is it arbitrary? You know, God calls other holy days Sabbath rests, but he doesn't call these holy days as Sabbath rests. He doesn't call them Shabbat. So why? Again, rule number one, God is not vague and imprecise when it comes to his basic instructions in the law. So why do you suppose he avoided using the term Shabbat in the case of describing the spring holy days when he clearly does use the word to describe the fall holy days? Well, it's because God isn't vague and he isn't unclear with his law and he avoids confusion. And contained within his instructions for the spring holy days is to begin the count after the singular Sabbath, the Sabbath. He doesn't say a Sabbath. The Feast of Trumpets is a Sabbath. The Day of Atonement is a Sabbath. The Feast of Tabernacles is a Sabbath. The eighth day is a Sabbath. And why a Sabbath? Because it's plural. It's one of many Sabbaths. But the Sabbath in the instructions for counting to Pentecost is singular. And when God says the Sabbath, he's speaking in the singular. And the singular Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread has to be the weekly Sabbath. And to further underscore that point, God does not use the word Shabbat to describe the first day or the last day of unleavened bread, even though they technically are Sabbaths. You see what I'm driving at here? I mean, now to me, that's compelling evidence. I can't say it's dogmatic. It doesn't seal the deal, but it's compelling. It makes you look further, which is what we're going to do. We're going to look further. We need some more information. So now let's take another look at the instructions here in verses 15 and 16 again. So right in the middle of verse 15, seven Sabbaths shall be completed, Even unto the day after the seventh Sabbath shall you number 50 days. Now, how do you get around the fact that the day after the seventh Sabbath is the 50th day? I mean, that seals the deal, right? There's only one way you can count seven Sabbaths and have the holy day following immediately after the seventh Sabbath and be the 50th day. Well, that depends on how you define the word Sabbath. So there are two Hebrew words that I'd like to bring to your attention now. And those words are Shabbat and Sabuah. We already looked at Sabuah. And I think the word Shabbat is easy enough to translate. It's the Sabbath. It means the Sabbath. But Shabuah simply means week. It's a general word for week. And as I've already mentioned, the Jewish name for their Pentecost holy day is Shavuot. So the Hebrew has a word specifically for the Sabbath, and it has a word specifically for week. Now, in order for you to conclude that you should begin the count on the morrow following the first day of unleavened bread, then the word for Sabbath here has to not mean the Sabbath, as in the seventh day of the week, or an annual holy day, but it just has to mean week in the general sense. That's the only way this works. So you count seven Sabbaths, that simply means count 7 weeks. Is that a plausible argument that you can do that? Now, I don't begin to assume that I can argue with a Hebrew scholar, a trained scholar, on how to define Hebrew words and how their language works. But what I do when I come across questionable Hebrew words is I'm going to do a quick search to see how God uses the word elsewhere in the scriptures. And at least for me, that's a starting point for understanding how words can be used. And if I see that God uses the word like Shabbat to describe a general week anywhere else, you know, it doesn't mean the Sabbath, it just means a week. If I see that God does that, then I'll say, okay, yes, you're right. That's a valid point. The Sabbath can simply mean the end of the week. Even if the end of the week is Wednesday, or, you know, we'll call it the Sabbath. Well, guess what? God never uses the word Shabbat for the generic word for week anywhere in the scriptures. The word Shabbat occurs 111 times in 89 verses in Hebrew scriptures. I went through them all, one by one. I went through every single one of them. God doesn't use the word Shabbat because he already has a word for week, and it is Sabuah or Shabuah. Let's turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 16. Deuteronomy 16. We'll see here in Deuteronomy that it is correct to state that we are to count 7 weeks. That is a correct statement. And the Hebrew word there is Shabuah. It's the generic word for week. So does that mean then it's okay to start the count from any day in the week and count 7 weeks from any random day? Well, let's read here in Deuteronomy 16. Verses 9 and 10. You shall count 7 weeks for yourself. Begin to count the 7 weeks from the time you put the sickle to the grain. Then you shall keep the feast of weeks to the eternal your God with the tribute of a freewill offering from your hand, which you shall give to the eternal your God as he blesses you. So there it is. That's where the Jewish people get their title for the Feast of Pentecost. Hag Shavuah, the Feast of Weeks. So Deuteronomy doesn't tell us to count the Sabbaths. It says count the weeks. So that validates their point, right? Well, we have a problem here. If we were to use Deuteronomy to establish our doctrine, you know, if we had no other instructions on how to count the Pentecost except for what's written here in Deuteronomy, well, what's missing from the equation? God says to count the weeks. He says to start the count from the time that you put the sickle to the grain. So what's missing? The correct day from when to put the sickle to the grain, right? We're missing some vital information here. We're missing the starting point. You see, Deuteronomy is a book of summary for God's law. It was written 40 years later. And you can use Deuteronomy to establish doctrine, obviously. But in the case where there is missing information, you have to go back to the earlier instructions. You have to go back and fill in the blanks. And so in order to do that, in order to know where to place the starting point, you have to go back to Leviticus chapter 23. Now, the other example of where Shavuah is used as the generic word for week is Leviticus chapter 12. And you don't have to turn there, but that's where God gives instructions for women giving birth and their customary impurity to last for 2 weeks, 2 Shavuos. So in that case, you know where the starting point is for a woman, for her 2 weeks of impurity, right? It's the day she gives birth. That's the starting point. The baby is born and then she goes 2 weeks from that starting point, whether it's a Monday or a Wednesday or a Thursday. God doesn't use the word Shabbat there because it can be a generic word for week, because he already has a word for week and it's Shabuah. So the issue with Deuteronomy 16 is that you need the starting point to count 7 weeks. You need the starting point from when to put the sickle to the grain, and that instruction is given in Leviticus 23. The sickle goes to the grain on the morrow after the Sabbath. They conduct the wave sheaf ceremony of offering the first of the first fruits of the harvest, and then they can begin 7 full weeks of harvest, the spring harvest. They complete that by the 7th Sabbath, and then following that is the 50th day. So is it correct to refer to this day as the Feast of Weeks? Sure it is. If you start the count from the morrow after the Sabbath and you count 7 Sabbaths, that is 7 weeks, 7 complete weeks. We're not violating the meaning of the Hebrew word of Shavuot when we do that. But if we begin the count in the middle of the week and then we claim that we are keeping the holy day on the morrow after the 7th Sabbath, or that we have counted 7 Sabbaths, when in fact that 7th Sabbath is not a holy Sabbath, well, then we have violated the meaning of the word Shabbat. So in one sense, we're not violating Shavuot because it works, it's generic, but Shabbat is not. So to call Wednesday the 7th Sabbath is a violation of Shabbat. But again, who am I, right, to challenge the Hebrew scholars that claim that Shabbat can mean a week and, in fact, not the Sabbath day? Even though the scriptures never do that anywhere else, if only I had something that was more like rock-solid doctrine to go by. Well, in fact, we do have rock-solid doctrine that we can go by. The simple disciples of Jesus Christ have rock-solid doctrine that trumps the Hebrew scholars. We don't need the Hebrew scholars to figure this out. Let's turn over to Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians, the 2nd chapter. We'll see here in Ephesians that when we put Jesus Christ into the mix, we have a sure foundation on how to build solid doctrine. Let's read in verses 19 through 22 of Ephesians chapter 2. Now therefore, you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom the whole building being fitted together grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built together for a dwelling place of God in the Spirit. So we're to look to the Hebrew scriptures of the prophets and the Greek scriptures of the apostles, with Jesus Christ as the foundation of that, the chief cornerstone. That's how we in God's church establish doctrine. The Jewish scholars do not have the foundation of the apostles, and they do not have the chief cornerstone of Jesus Christ. Now, how does that work with how we're going to study our count, the counts of Pentecost? Well, let's turn to Mark chapter 12. Mark the 12th chapter. Quite simply, we're going to look to the words of Jesus Christ himself. Jesus Christ gives us the key to this whole debate by giving us a very important piece of data. And let's notice it here in Mark chapter 12. We'll start reading in verse 38. Then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered, saying, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you." But he answered and said to them, "An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth." That's the key right there. 3 days and 3 nights. We know for a fact that Jesus Christ died toward the end of the Passover day on the 14th. We know that for a fact. We know for a fact that the first day of unleavened bread follows, and that they wanted him down off the cross and into the tomb before the Sabbath, the annual Sabbath began. We know that's the 15th. We know for a fact that the women who bought and prepared spices on the day between the two Sabbaths, that it happened between two Sabbaths. We know for a fact that the scriptures say that it was after the Sabbath and before a Sabbath. So the only way that works is if there's two Sabbaths involved and they did it in between. We know for a fact that Mary Magdalene came to the tomb after the weekly Sabbath. We know for a fact that Jesus Christ is the first of the first fruits, and therefore he is the fulfillment of the wave sheaf ceremony, which occurred on that first day following the weekly Sabbath that Mary Magdalene approached the tomb. Now, if we know all this to be true, then there is only one way that you can get 3 days and three nights between Passover and the wave sheaf ceremony. And that is to have the Passover occur on a Wednesday, to have the wave sheaf ceremony occur on the morrow after the weekly Sabbath. There is no other way. It doesn't work any other way. If you conduct the wave sheaf ceremony on the day immediately following the first day of unleavened bread, then no matter how you slice it or dice it, Jesus Christ would only have been in the tomb for about 36 hours. And that is coincidentally the same length of time that mainstream Christianity gives us with the Good Friday, Easter Sunday scenario. But Jesus Christ tells us that he would be in the tomb for 3 days and three nights. And that is rock solid doctrine, upheld by the Hebrew scriptures of the prophets, the Greek scriptures of the apostles, and Jesus Christ being the foundation and chief cornerstone. So we have the correct starting point. It is the morrow after the weekly Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread. But what about the end point? You know, some of you might be familiar with the Sunday versus Monday Pentecost. You know, the Worldwide Church of God for decades kept a Monday Pentecost until it was revealed that their reckoning was wrong. And we started the count on the correct day, but somehow we ended up with confusion on the end point. How could that be? Well, let's turn back to Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus 23. What we're going to see here is how easy it is to get tripped up over the simplest of mistakes. But when we see that we've made a mistake, what is the proper thing to do? The proper thing is to admit the mistake and make the correction, which is exactly what the church did when the mistake came to light. So what happened? Well, the simple mistake is found in the meaning of the word from. So let's notice verse 15 and the meaning of the word from. Leviticus 23 and verse 15, "And you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, seven Sabbaths shall be completed." So how do we interpret the word from here? Well, it's simple, right? Start on day one, count 7 days to the Sabbath, count seven Sabbaths, or 49 days, have a holy day on the morrow following the seventh Sabbath when we arrive at the 50th day. Where could we possibly go wrong? Well, let's have a little fun here, a little fun with some semantics and some math. Scenario one, you decide to go on a weekend vacation getaway. You check into the hotel on a Friday, and you plan to check out on a Sunday. You're staying in the hotel from Friday to Sunday. When you go to the checkout, you see that the hotel clerk has, I said jerk, he is the jerk, right? The hotel jerk has charged you for 3 days. And you say, wait a minute, we checked in on Friday and we checked out on Sunday. That's 2 days. Why am I being charged for 3 days? And the clerk says, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 3 days. And you say, no, from Friday to Saturday is 1 day. And from Saturday to Sunday is 2 days. It's 2 days. So if from Friday to Saturday is 1 day when you go to check out of the hotel, well, then what about when you count to Pentecost? The morrow after the Sabbath is the first day of the week. If you count from the first day of the week to the second day, you have 1 day. So Sunday to Monday is 1 day. Monday to Tuesday is the second day. Tuesday to Wednesday is the third day. Wednesday to Thursday is the fourth day. Thursday to Friday is the fifth day. Friday to Saturday is the sixth day. Saturday to Sunday is the seventh day. Multiplied times 7 weeks, and you still have the 49th day occurring on a Sunday. So what day is the 50th day? It's Monday. It's all in the semantics, right? And how we define the word from. Now, you think this is a ridiculous debate to have, right? Until you're standing before that hotel clerk, and you're arguing about paying for 3 days when you only stayed for two nights. Now, part of the solution, again, is to realize that we're debating semantics here. And the English language does add to the confusion. When you go to the Hebrew, you'll see that the phrase, from the morrow after, that comes from one word. And that word simply means tomorrow. So the word from is added in the English to help us make sense of the phrase. It doesn't occur in the Hebrew. There is no Hebrew word for from. So it just simply means tomorrow. So from Sunday to Monday is one day. But if I just said tomorrow, which is Sunday, that is one day. Let's look at another example of having fun with math and how semantics can play tricks on us when we're doing simple math. You know, I've had an opportunity with my business in Dallas. I provide lots of our young people with their first job. So most of the teenagers in the Dallas congregation had their first job coming to work for me. Whether that is, you can ask them if that's good or not, but I like to think that it was good. But if only Hannah lived in Dallas, she could come work for me. So now, let's say instead of doing hourly wages, I'm going to just pay my employees a daily wage. I'm going to pay them $100 a day. You come work for me, I'll pay you $100 a day. So let's do some math. The first full week of this summer session started on Monday, June the 3rd. You completed your first full week by Friday, June the 7th. Monday the 3rd, Tuesday the 4th, Wednesday the 5th, Thursday the 6th, Friday the 7th. Are you with me so far? Now, to compute my payroll, I'm simply going to take the number of the day, Friday the 7th, and I'm going to subtract the number of the first day, Monday the 3rd. That sounds fair. 7 minus 3 should give us the balance of what I owe you. 7 minus 3 equals 4. 4 times $100 per day equals $400. So for your 5-day work week at $100 a day, I'm going to pay you $400. How do you feel about that? Hannah, you want to come work for me? So the disgruntled employee comes to me, you know, Mr. Leiby, I was supposed to get $500, but you only paid me $400. And I say, no, the computer formula, you know, it can't be wrong. So it subtracted the number from the first day from the number of the last day. The balance has to be the right amount. But I'm not convincing that employee, am I? And he's adamant that he's being cheated out of $100 every week. So finally, I relent and I say, all right, you do the math for me and I'll pay you accordingly. So he says, okay, Mr. Leiby, Monday's the 3rd day. I'm going to work for you for 5 days. 3 plus 5 equals 8. Therefore, the fifth working day is the 8th day, right? I'd like $100 for each numbered day. The 3rd day is 100. The 4th day is 200. The 5th day is 300. The 6th day is 400. The 7th day is 500. And the 8th day is 600. $600 you owe me for the week. Why do I feel like I'm in an Abbott and Costello movie, right? That's good math for the employee, not so good for me. You know, how about we simply just count the days? You see, when we do subtraction, we lose a day. When we do addition, we gain a day. But when we count the days, we come up with the right amount. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. That's 5 days. $100 per day, I give the employee $500. The key here is to understand with counting, we are being inclusive. We're being inclusive. That is, we include the day that we start on. Begin the count from the morrow after the Sabbath. When we are being inclusive, we count the morrow after the Sabbath. So we count Sunday. But when we go from Sunday to Monday and say that's one day, then we're not counting Sunday. We're not including Sunday into the count. Sunday and Monday are 2 days. But from Sunday to Monday is one day, depending on how you view it. You see, it's all in the semantics. And understanding the meaning of the word from and how easy it would be to make that mistake. But now you might say, no, that's too easy. There's no way I would make that mistake. Not me. I'm pretty good at math. I'm not going to make that mistake. Let me give you one more example. I'm going to quote to you an excerpt from a sermon I gave in 2012. So this is 12 years ago. I gave this sermon. And within this quote is a doctrinal error that I preached from the lecture. I want you to listen carefully, and I want you to see if you can spot the error. I was hoping Joanne would be here, because she probably would be able to spot the error. But no one else has been able to do it yet, so we'll see if anyone here can do it. So, what I was trying to demonstrate in this segment of the sermon was the doctrinal truth that Jesus Christ was crucified on a Wednesday, he was in the tomb for 3 days and 3 nights, and how all that works with the 2 Sabbaths, and the Friday in between. So, quoting from that sermon, quote, A careful study of the gospel accounts shows very conclusively that Jesus Christ was crucified on a Wednesday. And that for the women to have bought and prepared the oils and spices for anointing Jesus' body after a Sabbath and before a Sabbath, there had to be two Sabbaths involved. Thursday was an annual Sabbath, or the first day of unleavened bread. Let's see how that's described in John chapter 19. How do we know this for absolute certainty? How do we know beyond the shadow of a doubt that the day dawning after Jesus Christ died was a holy day? Well, because we know for absolute certainty that he died on the Passover. No one debates that. And what day do we know for absolute certainty follows the Passover? Every year, without fail, what follows the 14th day of the first month? The 15th day of the first month. Isn't that amazing how that works? And Leviticus 23 is very clear that the 15th day and the 22nd day are holy days. They are annual Sabbaths. And then quoting from John chapter 19 and verse 31, I said, therefore, because it was the preparation day, that the bodies should not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day, the Jews asked Pilate that their legs might be broken and that they might be taken away. Okay, who spotted the doctrinal error? Did anyone raise their hand? No one spotted. See? No one spotted in Dallas either. Now, I've got to say, I've held on to this error for more than 30 years in the church. Hannah, did you spot the error? You didn't spot the error, did you? Oh. Did you spot the error? Okay, go ahead and say it. She got it. She's the only one that was able to spot the error. 12 years ago, I gave that sermon, and it was only about 3 or 4 years ago that I realized the mistake that I've held on to all this time. And I remembered giving in that sermon. I knew what I said there. And I said, Leviticus 23 is very clear that the 15th day and the 22nd day are holy days. But is Leviticus 23 clear about that? No, it is not. Leviticus 23 says that we should observe the 15th. It does say the 15th of the first month is a holy day and that we should eat unleavened bread for 7 days. That's what it says. Eat unleavened bread for 7 days and then have a holy day on the 7th day. That's all it says. It does not say the 22nd is the holy day. It says 7 days from the 15th is the holy day. And of course, now I would go through the math and all that, but she's already figured it out, so I don't have to do that. So the 21st is the holy day, not the 22nd. And how could I have made that mistake? How could I have held on to that for 30 years? Because I went from the 15th and I counted 15 plus 7 equals 22. That's what I've done. I did not count inclusively. I did addition, and therefore, we added a day. We gained a day. But it was reading the account in Exodus just a couple years ago. I read the account, I believe it's Exodus 12:18. The scripture actually says that the 7th day of unleavened bread is the 21st day of the month. And what's interesting, and maybe a little pathetic, is that for a split second when I read that, my mind says, that's not right. You know, I actually said that in my mind, that the scriptures were wrong, because it didn't fit my preconceived notion. So now, fortunately for me, it was only a split second before I decided to do some more in-depth mathematical calculations. And I finally figured out that the 7th day from the 15th is the 21st, not the 22nd. Now, you see what that proves here, right? If God says to begin the first day of unleavened bread on the 15th, count for 7 days, and then have the holy day on the 21st, it proves inclusive counting. Can't get around it. There's no way. That proves that Sunday, Pentecost, is the correct day. But that's a good example of how easy it is to come to wrong conclusions from the simplest of foundational mistakes. Not only did I hold on to that mistake for 30 years, but I preached it from the lectern. Doctrinal error from the lectern. Is Jesus Christ going to reject me because of this mistake? Lynn Leiby, for decades as a member of my church, you thought that the 7th day of unleavened bread was the 22nd day of the first month. Not only that, but you taught it. You taught it to hundreds of my brethren. What do you have to say for yourself? I'm sorry. I made a mistake. I didn't count inclusively when I counted from the 15th day of the first month. Not good enough. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Now, I'm confident and certain that that's not how that conversation's going to go. And why do I know that? Because I believe in a God of mercy, and I believe in a God of grace. Now, I've heard critics in the church say, well, the Worldwide Church of God used to keep Pentecost on Monday when the correct day is Sunday. How can they be the true Church of God when they weren't keeping the right day? And the answer is quite simple. They made a mistake. And when they realized the mistake, they fixed it. Now, what if I told that same critic that I believe that the church doesn't make mistakes? What if I said that anything that came out of Herbert Armstrong's mouth is 100% correct because he's God's chosen apostle for the end time, and therefore he never makes mistakes? Well, he'd conclude correctly that I was in a cult. And you can't have it both ways. Either God's true church never makes mistakes, or sometimes they do make mistakes. And if you ever want to know if the church of God can make a mistake, all you got to read is Revelation 2 and 3, right? Revelation chapters 2 and 3, the message to the seven churches. God's church makes some real zingers sometime. They make mistakes. The key is to see that when we made a mistake, we changed. And the controversy surrounding the Monday versus Sunday Pentecost for me, well, it only proves that God's church is capable of doing that. Some other churches aren't capable of doing that. I can think of one who's got a leader that they call infallible, so that they claim can never be wrong about anything. They'll say that you cannot make mistakes. But if God's church is capable of seeing that something is an error and they change it, well, to me, that's a healthy sign to have in God's church. Well, today is the seventh Sabbath. From our count, from the morrow after the weekly Sabbath, during the days of unleavened bread. We counted 50 days, we counted seven Sabbaths, and we counted 7 weeks. We counted from the morrow after the Sabbath using inclusive counting so that we would arrive on the 50th day, which would follow the seventh Sabbath. And tomorrow we arrive on the 50th day, and that is the Feast of Weeks.